Sometimes I sit up here and look at all of you, and we're singing together, listening to the choir and the music, and I remember how grateful I am to do this work. And had that thought and just wanted to let you know, thank you. I don't know if humankind understands culture. The act of being human is not easy knowledge. That is the truth, isn't it? The act of being human is not easy knowledge. The saying goes that culture is like water to a fish. It's just all around us. The fish has no idea that it's in the water. That's just where it is. But that's not quite right, is it? Because all living cultures are outcomes of intercultural communication. I want you to think back to an experience, probably when you were a child or a young adult, when you became really aware of cultural diversity. Maybe a new family moved nearby, or maybe you moved to a new city yourself. Maybe it was something on TV or in a book, or maybe it was a new school or a trip you took across town or across the world. But think of a moment when this happened, when you became really aware of other cultures. Do you remember how that felt? Did you have the shyness of encounter? I'm not sure about this. Or were you insatiably curious? Was it frightening? Disorienting? Did the adults or the other people in your life help you navigate this encounter? Did they try to explain difference, or did they leave you confused? Did they help you feel pride in your own culture, or was there some kind of shame or embarrassment that you weren't like them, whoever the them was? For some of you, I'm sure that you don't remember this moment because you always existed in more than one culture. Maybe you grew up in an immigrant family or as part of a culturally or religiously different group than the majority around you. So you knew before you could swim what it meant to move different kinds of water. I have lots of memories of like this growing up when I noticed the differences in culture. And I was thinking about the message this week, I remembered a particular cross-cultural encounter from my youth, one that I think is illustrative about culture and diversity. I grew up in the Seattle area, and our Unitarian Universalist youth conferences that I always attended, 300 or more high school kids gathered in a campsite or a church basement, included people from Washington State and Oregon and Idaho and British Columbia, Canada. And Canadians are different, eh? After a weekend with a bunch of them, most of the Americans would come back with a slight Canadian accent. We'd say a few words differently, including putting A at the end of our sentences. Eh? We'd all be a little more polite, which our parents thought was great. It kind of rubbed off on us. It didn't seem to go the other way. I don't know why that was. The culture is very close, but it's just different enough to notice. Like 10% off center, I used to think, or I should say 10% off what I was used to. And that's the key insight, the difference between off center and off what I was used to. So I'll come back to that. The biggest cross-cultural encounter I've had, though, was moving to the south side of Chicago for graduate school. So many of my assumptions were challenged. So many of my thoughts had to be rethought. After a few years there, I noticed just how white the undergraduates of the University of Chicago were. I saw them acting like they owned the sidewalk, talking to each other on the train in loud voices, assuming their centrality in whatever story was happening. I remember a very particular moment on the train observing a group of them and thinking to myself, my God, they are so white. And then looking at my own hands and thinking, how did that happen? A friend of mine studied abroad in the Dominican Republic, and then she did 2 years in the Peace Corps in Uzbekistan after college. Did any of you study abroad or do the Peace Corps or something like that? Right? You know what it's like. After you've been there a while, she told me, you see the other Americans in a very different light. You start to see yourself in a very different light. You start to see your own culture from the outside. And when you come home, there's a reverse culture shock. Intercultural competencies aim at freeing people from their own logic and cultural idioms in order to engage with others and listen to their ideas. White is a color, which none of us really is. We're all different shades and hues of brown, of some variety or one another, from the very light to the very dark. White is a color, but whiteness is a culture, a way of being in the world. And some folks, some of you and some of your families over the generations have found ways to enter that culture. The Irish, the Italian, the Bohemian, the Jew, none of these cultures were considered white 150 years ago. None of them. They had to work to be counted as white. Whiteness assimilates and homogenizes. It bleaches. And it tries to act like it's normal. And everyone else is different. So a burger joint is American, but everything else is an ethnic restaurant. Whiteness is the majority. Everyone else is the minority. Although if you counted all the people that didn't used to count as white, as not white, whiteness would be a very small percentage of the population. I said before that my first instinct as a teenager encountering the Canadians was to say that they were 10% off center. That assumes, of course, that I was in the center, a false assumption. So now I say something different, that some elements of one of the prominent cultures in Canada is similar to, but just different enough to catch you up, some elements of one of the prominent cultures in America. There's no single American culture, and no single Canadian culture either, because a member of the First Nations is different than a Quebecois, is different than an Icelandic immigrant family in Manitoba, or a second generation Taiwanese family in Vancouver. The culture that I grew up in, suburban, white, liberal, Pacific Northwestern, isn't center. My culture isn't normal. It's one culture, one strand in a vast tapestry of human existence. My culture, that strand, is made up of many threads, German and Scandinavian immigrants, naturalists and engineers, who some appropriated native cultural elements and the idiosyncrasies that grow up in any place. When I moved to Chicago, I had to learn to cross against the light at an intersection and to carry an umbrella, because people in Seattle never do those things. Never, ever. You can always tell a tourist in Seattle because they have an umbrella. And that's just one shift in one dominant culture in one country. Some of you have made much larger cultural leaps, and there is so much to learn. These opportunities sometimes lead to rediscovering one's own identity under the deciphered forms of the other. When we talk about intercultural competency, this is part of what we're talking about. The old saying goes that you don't really know your own language unless you can read and write and speak a second one. And if we just swim in our own culture, we don't realize that it's just one kind of water. And if we happen to be in the majority culture, if we happen to be in the culture of whiteness in America, then we can be tempted to think that we are normal, that we are the center. This is both false and harmful. The invitation to intercultural competence is an invitation to justice and curiosity, to love, to depth, to truth, and to wonder. To understand that there are many, many cultures, that each one of them is constantly changing and interacting with other cultures, that no culture is normal or center, to become aware of your own culture and thus be able to critique it and appreciate it, to know the stories of other cultures, to know enough about other cultures that we can be good citizens of our own city, let alone our own country, let alone the world. To work against those elements of our culture that are imperialistic or warlike or unhelpful, to form new collages, new patterns, new art of the mixing of culture. This is the journey of intercultural competence. Folks who work on intercultural competency speak of stages of development. You start usually, most people do, in denial, thinking that your water is the only water. You don't know that other cultures even exist. It's hard in our modern world to get away with this for very long, though some people try hard to stay there. The second stage is defense. My culture is the best one, the normal one, the center, and most people are in this place, to be honest. They think that they are the normal and the other ones are weird in some way. We're right and they should be more like us. Third, minimization. This is saying we're all the same, aren't we, underneath it all? Aren't we all just human? Those differences aren't really important. This is where you'll find a lot of Unitarian Universalists. It's okay. It's a journey. And if you're here, I invite you to the next step. This is better than defense, so you keep moving along on the journey. Fourth is acceptance, to see that there are lots of different cultures and that ours is one of them, and that we're okay with that, and to appreciate things about that diversity. We could avoid a lot of conflict in our world if more folks were at the stage of acceptance. It's a good place. Fifth, adaption and integration. We know enough about our own culture and others that we can adapt. We can adjust the frame. Like fluency in another language, we can code switch from one culture to another and shed some of our own cultural skin. I invite you to move along in this journey. Part of the work is figuring out where you are, just beginning to explore diversity or ready to take a deeper look at your own culture, or starting to move into a world, more world-inclusive way of life, or been there and been doing it long enough that you're ready to bring some other folks along on the journey. You have to walk before you can run. Fundamentally, the journey of intercultural competency is about openness. It's a heart journey, a spiritual journey. It's about suspending judgment. It's about laying aside feelings of superiority and of shame and moving into genuine curiosity and a spirit of love. Here are some ideas, some concrete things that you can do to expand your intercultural competency. Read more widely. Explore more ideas. Read authors and listen to music and discover the history outside your own culture. And also things about your own culture from folks who are themselves outside of it. So you can get that experience of looking in the mirror with different eyes. If you need a suggestion for a book to start, I know Unitarians often like a book to begin to read. I certainly recommend Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates if you haven't already picked it up. But start wherever you like. Pick a thread and follow it. Music, culture, art. Pick one thread and follow where it goes. Over the next few months here at the church, I'll be co-leading a class here on anti-racism and diversity, and we're going to do this kind of work exactly. So I would welcome you to sign up on the sign-up that's out in the lobby. We'll start the class next week. We'd love to have you join us. In this work, you'll have moments of resistance, of exhaustion, of challenge. This is not easy. So it's better to have company. To make a commitment in your family, with others here at the church, to walk in the ways of understanding together. Learn the stories they don't always teach in school. In some history textbooks, there's only a page or two, or even just a paragraph, about the Great Migration, one of the most important events in American history, and we often don't even talk about it. I don't think I learned about it in high school at all. It was not until college when I discovered the story. The reason we read This is the Rope, that Kimberly read that story, is to share a piece of that vital story with you. You can't understand Rockford or America without knowing the story of the Great Migration. This is the rope. This is the thread that connects the stories together, that holds families together and neighborhoods, the cultural rituals, the family reunion, which isn't just for blood relatives, though, truth be told, we're all blood relatives, aren't we? The way folks pass on from generation to generation, the passwords and habits that make a people, that hold memory and hope and power. Learn the stories, the history, the values, the experiences. These stories are never simple. They are not one-dimensional. So a huge part of the work of intercultural competency is avoiding stereotypes, getting under the surface, There are cultural modes and methods, but each person is still their own person. And you know what they say about assumptions. As we each move along and on our journey, it is also my hope that we will build a church that becomes more and more culturally adaptable. It isn't just people who can become interculturally competent. Institutions can too, schools and businesses and churches. So we're going to tell stories and use metaphors and make music from a wider and wider circle of humanity. Draw the circle wide. We're going to practice and practice until we can clap together on the downbeat. We're going to have some drums sometime, which is going to help with that. We're going to sing in Spanish every once in a while, and we're going to stretch our muscles until we can do more of the heavy lifting, until we can better answer our calling to be a reflection of this great and beautiful world. We are our grandmother's prayers and our grandfather's dreamings. We are in our own culture. We come from that culture, each of us, as our ways and patterns. This song, We Are, is by the Unitarian Universalist African-American composer and musician Yesse Barnwell, leader of Sweet Honey in the Rock. We are our grandmother's prayers and our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of our ancestors. And we are the Spirit of God, the lovers of life and the builders of nations. We come from a past and we are building a future. We stop. Lean into me, the universe sings in quiet meditation. And the stone wall I lean upon spins me wordless and silent to the reach of the stars and to the heavens within. It's not humankind, after all, nor is it culture that limits us. It is the vastness we do not enter. It is the stars we do not let own us. We are stardust, each of us, all of us, one universe, the rising moon, the stone wall, the stars, the skin of the drum and the string of the piano, the sounds of our voice, the colors in all of our beauty, one universe. This is not minimization. We do not come to erase our differences in a spiritual unity, but to dance between the celebration of our diversity and the knowledge of our oneness. We come not with bleach, but with a rainbow of paints and fabrics. All the colors abound for the whole world around and for everyone under the sun. Many windows, one light. My prayer, our work, our calling to get woke and stay woke, to know that each of us has a culture, maybe more than one, that this is one of many, that each one is different and connected, to see the variety as beautiful, to be curious and creative, to try as best we can to be gentle with each other in the work, to sing even when we don't know the words, to reach out and keep on reaching out, to remember the stars and the canyon wall, to weave the thread and embrace the tapestry, to love and live and wonder, and to sing, sing, sing. Let's rise in body or spirit.